Right. So we only have four items left. I guess we'll do mule deer.
There's two on the next page too.
Oh, there are. Got it.
Okay.
I guess we could do, is there any, are we expecting anybody from Alberta to show up as far as weighing in? And why don't we do the mule deer season change, and then we'll do the Alberta sage grouse and the sharp tail grouse.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the next item that we'll be covering is the mule deer season change in hunting districts 502, 510, 520, and 575 for 2019. And this is a final. It was brought before you the December meeting. We propose to change the 2019 mule deer hunting regulations in these hunting districts to address CWD. We all know that this is the area down south of Billings where CWD was first found in 2017. The specific changes that we're looking at doing to address CWD, and all of these changes are part and parcel of what is in the CWD plan that the Commission adopted. So in Hunting District 502, we're proposing to change the general mule deer season from buck only to either sex.
Mr.
Likewise, in Hunting District 502, oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Colton. Okay. In Hunting District 510, we propose to eliminate the unlimited 510-50 buck mule deer permit and establish an either-sex mule deer season. And I would remind the Commission and those listening here that we know that bucks are 2 to 3 times more likely to be infected with CWD, consequently more likely to be spreading it on the landscape. And so antlered buck management is one of the best things we can do for CWD management. In Hunting District 520, we propose to change the general mule deer season from buck only to either sex in that portion of the hunting district lying east of Highway 212. And in 575, to increase the antlerless mule deer bee license from 250 to 500, and to increase the biennial range from 5 to 200 up to 5 to 750. Now, this proposal is outside the current biennial range and requires Commission action. We took public comment from December 10th to January 18th, and we received 14 comments. It was clear from the comments that many people did not understand CWD, the threat that it poses to our wildlife, how it's managed, those kinds of things. Many folks didn't realize that we have a CWD management plan, that it's a very good plan and one that we're trying to follow, and that we have been testing and looking for CWD in a very scientifically rigorous way, and that plan, as I said earlier, that had been vetted and approved by the Commission. So with that brief introduction, I'd stand for any questions.
We have motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move the Commission adopt the 2019 mule deer hunting regulations for hunting districts 502, 510, 520, and 575 as presented by FWP, and that all other aspects of the deer season remain unchanged unless addressed in other proposals.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion, a second. Any questions for the department? I guess my question is, can you explain to me why we are going from bucks only when they're the primary issue with CWD to either sex? Is it an effort to reduce populations, or
to reduce density? And keep in mind also that doesn't mean that does don't have CWD and that they don't spread it on the landscape. In fact, many of the animals that we have tested positive have been does. So we know that that is also an issue. There are several ways to address CWD on the landscape. One is the antlered buck component, which is a major one, but also does spread it too on the landscape. So we need to address that. The other things that we can do is try to minimize large concentrations of deer. We can do some hot spot reductions, if you will, with focused hunts in focused areas, those kinds of things. These are all CWD management ways of doing it that not only Montana is doing, but other states, and it's certainly something that AFWA and WAFWA in their management guidelines point to.
So the thought process is not only to really hit the mature bucks, but also to try to decrease the population as much as possible to minimize the spread out of an infected area?
Commissioner or Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I would not say reduce the population as much as possible.
Okay.
But we want to reduce densities so that we have a little bit lower density on the landscape. For example, when we had the special hunts in Region 5 last year, which you will remember, we had a special hunt south of Billings there, and the idea was to reduce the population somewhat, but we took 200 deer out of a population of 5,000.
John, due to the fact that the CWD was found along the High Line, will we perceive similar changes to some of those areas as well?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Brower, we are looking to the future for doing that. Now that we know CWD is there, the next step for us is to find out, well, how much is it? What's the prevalence rate up there? And so that's what we're going to be looking to next year. And so we're going to be running those check stations up there again, looking to hunter-harvested animals to find out what the prevalence is. Once we know the prevalence, then we would design some season structures up there perhaps to address that issue.
So do we have season structures that align with prevalence rates? Have we gotten that far along in our management, if it's below 5% or up to 10% or how that works?
Mr. Chairman, we would like to keep prevalence at below 5%, if at all possible. And some of these areas, depending on how large of an area you look at, for example, down south of Billings there, the larger area, we're at about 2%. But if you look at a smaller area, that right around Bridger, where we found it and where we had the special hunt, we're close to 8% there. That's higher than we want it to be.
And what's Wyoming? I mean, like when Wyoming has their areas where it's really prevalent, what rate are they at?
Mr. Chairman, 30 to 40%.
Oh.
Yep. And when you get to 20, 30, 40% prevalence, then you start to see those significant population declines. In Colorado, for an example, there was a decline in a mule deer population that had similarly high prevalence rates that declined by 45%. In Wyoming, for example, where they had populations that had prevalence rates of 20 and 30%, they saw annual declines of 10 to 20%. So it declines 10 to 20% every year. It takes a while for that to happen. We don't want that to happen, which is why we're addressing it now. But it takes a while. It takes decades for it to get there. And speaking to our sister states, when CWD first showed up on the landscape, we didn't know this. We didn't know. They didn't know. Nobody knew that it would take that long for it to manifest itself at a population level. And so now that we're starting to see that in Wyoming, Colorado, Wisconsin, other states that have it, there's one thing that is in common. When we ask those states, what do you wish you could have done different? And they universally reply, I wish we'd addressed it earlier and urgently.
Like a lot of things in life.
Correct. Correct.
Climate change.
John, being a hunter and having been a hunter for a long time, I know the hunters are looking and saying, what's this going to look like in 5 years, you know, in terms of my hunting opportunities and so forth. And I, knowing the unknowns and the limits and what we do know, you know, it seems to me that's a difficult question to answer, but it seemed like we need to be working on some kind of a way to project where this might end up, you know, and hopefully maybe not make them comfortable, but make them more knowledgeable about the severity of what is we're doing and what it might mean in terms of the long run.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Aldrich, thank you for that comment. It's unlikely that we will see much change in 5 years, but certainly our children and our grandchildren stand to see significant changes on the landscape if we don't address it now. Now, granted, these are the best tools that are available right now, and I don't see any other tools on the landscape in the future. Trying to crystal ball this, I don't see anything else. Because this is a protein, it's not a bacteria, it's not a virus, it's not something that there's a vaccine for. So we need to address it in management ways that we currently have available to us, that is addressing buck numbers, buck ages, buck densities on the landscape, overall densities on the landscape, trying to reduce large aggregations of deer. Those are the tools that we currently have in place. We will be going back to these areas and reassessing them at 5 years and at 10 years to see if there is any difference. But we do know that if we don't address it, looking 30 years down the road, we only have to look south of our border to see what's happened.
So, John, in my area,
there's been, I think last year there was 5 within a 10-mile radius of my house. So I would say the prevalence rate there is fairly high. Maybe not, but if you get that many in that small area. The other question I have is there's some concerns from some of the landowners up there that, you know, from Shelby all the way to the North Dakota line, north of Highway 2, is that management area. We get a lot of hunters from Great Falls, Kalispell, places like that. And if the hunters do not show up because they got to bone it all out, the population is fairly high up there again. What are we going to do? They're asking to eliminate some damages.
Thank you, Commissioner Stuker. That question is one that we've had to address. Obviously, you're speaking to the CWD management zones that we have in place now that restrict a person from killing a deer in that area, moving it out of that area. The Northern Montana CWD management zone goes all the way from hunting districts 400 and 401 on the west all the way to the North Dakota line north of Highway 2. So anybody that shoots a deer up there can't take the whole head, the whole carcass, the spinal column out of that area. We designed those so that people would have access to processors and taxidermists all along Highway 2 and in those towns there. But it is something that we feel is necessary, and other states have shown us that it's necessary. Given our experience in Region 5, we'll see if things change as far as hunter behavior, but I don't know if we'll see a drastic reduction in hunter numbers. In Region 5, for example, when we had our special hunts that you may recall in 2017, where these were known CWD areas with the same restrictions in place, and we put licenses on sale, nearly 1,000 of them, and they sold out in a matter of minutes. So I don't know, at least for the near future, if we'll see a reduction in the number of hunters up there to address issues like you're speaking to.
And I agree with what we've done with the zones and the process we have in place, but I want us to think about if the numbers of hunters greatly reduce, how are we going to go in and work with these landowners to reduce the population? Because I can drive down my road 10 miles to town and probably see 500, 600, 700 deer laying along the road under the sprinklers and stuff. And if the hunters stop coming, there's going to be a problem. So I'm just saying let's have something, thinking a little bit about what may happen in the future. Thank you.
You know, Commissioner Stuker, we were lucky in Region 5, you know, when last year when we had that late hunt and, you know, with the participation, now you got Billings right there. But people were coming from a long distance to do that. So And
you guys sell all your tags in the north up by Chinook?
Chester, yes.
Yeah.
They sold out about half hour.
Okay.
But we only had one when we sold them. Now I think, excuse me, we only had one, I think, up there when we did that hunt north of Chester. Correct me if I'm wrong, we had 21 or so up in the High Line this last year?
26.
26, okay. So that makes it, because already some of the hunters that have been coming for 10, 20 years are saying, yeah, we probably won't come back. But down in the Billings area, you know, you're closer to that population center, and I believe that was included in our area so they could take the deer in. Where we don't have that population center up there, you know, you take the whole High Line in and it might be 1/100 of what the Billings population is, so.
We didn't see, you know, the news and the reporting and stuff. I mean, it's my understanding, talking with Region 5 anecdotally, that, again, we had really good participation, and there's an anxiousness among some of the hunters, but they're taking the precautions, they're going through the process, you know. Hopefully that'll continue. Hopefully they won't get spooked. But again, we're dealing with different populations.
Just something to think about.
Thank you, Commissioner Stuker. And perhaps it'd be worthwhile to ask Region 6 staff if they have been hearing about people that are not willing to come and hunt because of the CWD. I see that we have Scott Thompson and some other staff up there in Region 6 that could perhaps address that issue.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Chairman Vermillion and Commissioner Stuker. We've been, of course, educating the public about what we found. Certainly concerns about transport restrictions and where they need to pay attention to it, and acknowledgement that the management zones are clear. As far as hunters wanting to go elsewhere, we've not heard much about that. It's certainly the concern about high deer numbers is there, and good opportunity there. So we would look to likely liberalize bee licenses, both to help with prevalence testing and address high deer numbers next year. So.
Thank you, and I'd also like to thank you for the phone call I received talking to me about the zones and the new way we're approaching things. So thanks, Scott and Mark.
I would echo that to you guys.
So, John, just to kind of follow up on, you know, when I first got in the commission, there was a lot of concern about just sort of the general decline of mule deer in the West, especially in Wyoming and Colorado. And at the time, everybody was trying to figure out what was going on. Is it now becoming more, are people starting to conclude that maybe the reason we're seeing these big declines in mule deer across the West is related to the earlier onset, since it's certainly much more accentuated in places like Colorado and Wyoming as far as the decline? Is there any correlation? Are there people starting to look at whether that's a CWD decline? It's not habitat, it's not oil and gas, it's in fact CWD.
Thank you, Commissioner, or Mr. Chairman. That has not been something that has come forward. The mule deer management all across the West, as you know and have just mentioned, mule deer management all across the West, mule deer numbers in many parts of the place have gone down. In Montana, it's more in western Montana than it is in eastern Montana. We just heard reports from Region 6 that we're at all-time high numbers. Region 7 is doing well as far as mule deer numbers. I have not heard that CWD is one of the things as far as regional west-wide types of declines. There are those declines in specific herds that I mentioned earlier, but as far as overall declines and the problems that come with mule deer management, I have not heard that as an issue.
Just kind of, if you look down the road, I mean, this article that came out today makes it sound like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when we first discovered, when it was really blew up here in Montana, there was concern, but there was also sort of comfort taken in the fact that human beings had never gotten CWD by eating infected meat. And this article in particular is raising a lot of questions about how that's going to play out over the course of time, how diseases evolve or change over time, mutate over time, and whether it's going to figure out a way to find a new host. And I'm wondering if the states and the western states are starting to look at some sort of funding mechanism that might make it easier for hunters to test their game when they, because I see that yesterday in Minnesota they approved $1.8 million specifically to come up with a test or to support University of Minnesota's research to come up with a test that says that would allow a hunter to identify whether it has CWD on a fairly, maybe, I'm sure it's not as rigorous as the work that's done by labs, but it gives them some indication as to whether they need to be extra careful. And I wondered if there's any, if departments are starting to work together and kind of look at that and figure out what we're going to do, because my guess is that within 5 years, the warnings and the discussion that we're going to have with our sportsmen as it relates to CWD and consumption of meat is going to be very different than it is today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that comment, because it brings up something that I think that everybody needs to be aware of. There is an awful lot of research being done on developing tests that you referred to there. So that is something that may be on the horizon for us, that may be available for hunters in the field in the next 2-5 years, something like that. As far as it going to crossing the species barrier into humans, I don't know which article specifically you were looking at. There was some research that came out of Canada a year ago about feeding macaque monkeys, which is a model for humans. that particular study has been called into question among the scientific community. One of the people that was on our citizens advisory panel for CWD was Dr. Brent Race from the National Institute of Health in Hamilton, and he's doing research specifically on CWD and prion diseases. Dr. Race used the same species, in fact, the same race, if you will, or same clone of monkeys that was being used in Canada, and found that that could not make that happen. It's a particular characteristic of macaque monkeys that as they age, their brains develop some of the appearance of a CWD infection. In fact, Dr. Race took slides from sacrificed monkeys that he had that were known to be CWD and sent them to Canada, and they said that they were CWD positive. And so the possibility of transmittal of CWD to humans, I would not say it's zero, but it's very, very low. It's never been shown to be possible. And I remind folks that we've had this, the encephalopathy of scrapie, which is one that affects sheep, has been on the landscape for thousands of years, and that has not crossed the species barrier.
So is CWD closer to scrapies than it is other diseases out there?
Mr. Chairman, it's in the same family of diseases. It's in the same family of diseases as Creutzfeldt-Jakob in humans, as mad cow in cattle, for example. And we do know that mad cow can cross that species barrier, has been shown in Britain. Among the millions of Britons that eat cattle brains, or did eat cattle brains at the time, they probably don't anymore.
They did do Brexit.
Huh? I don't know. Yeah. But there was a few hundred, and so it is possible there. But again, I come back to the scrapie, which has been on the landscape for thousands of years and has not crossed that species barrier. All mammals have these prions in them. We have prions in them, but they seem they are species or species group specific. And so you can't say that CWD is, other than being in that same family of diseases, that it's like mad cow. It's different enough, apparently.
I get that.
Yep.
And I know that scientists understand that distinction. What I worry about is there's enough headwinds out there culturally in the United States in particular as it relates to hunting. And if you start having people concerned about consuming meat, not because there's actually a threat, but there's a perceived threat, I think that, you know, this diminishing participation and consumptive use of wildlife resources could only accelerate and will accelerate. And I think it would behoove this department to really figure out how we're going to go about messaging that and make sure we're really solid on it so people aren't afraid to go hunt. And so hunters still show up in the high line to hunt because there's a lot of deer. But and it's a lot of good opportunity, there's a lot of good access. So I do think it's not only is it a human safety issue, but it's also just from this department's perspective, using hunters as our primary method to manage wildlife resource, wildlife in general, I think there's going to be a lot of pushback. And much like mothers say, and fathers for that matter, say to their kid, maybe you shouldn't play football because concussions, the same sort of concern will manifest itself with hunting. And I worry about that a lot.
Mr. Chair.
Yep.
And commissioners, Mr. Vorey, can you talk a little bit about the work we've been doing with the other Western states specifically? Wasn't there a meeting in Denver? And then there's also, we've been engaging in the national conversation on trying to get funding for chronic wasting disease.
Yes, thank you, Director Williams. Yes, we have been involved internationally and here in the United States with both our Western states and with other organizations, including our provinces to the north. And so we did have a meeting in Denver last year where myself and Dr. Omberg and others attended to talk about CWD and CWD management. We currently have in the works a project with Wyoming, our sister state to the south, where we're looking at the efficacy of management of how they're doing it just across the border from where we know we have CWD and the things that we're doing. So there are a lot of things in the works nationally and even locally with Western states on those issues.
What are they doing just down by Powell in that area? I mean, how are they managing? Are they managing it really differently, or are they doing the same thing we are?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They have not, to date anyway, to my knowledge, changed their management as we have and are proposing to do here. And so it does make for a very good study situation. So they may in future, Wyoming, as I pointed out earlier, these other states didn't know the ramifications 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Now they are in a place where they've got, in some places, you know, prevalence levels that are 30 and 40%. Well, it's almost, there's nothing really you can do once it gets to that point. So,
well, that's my worry, is you've got this CWD pipeline coming out of Wyoming, that if we do our job up here and we really work on cutting that infection rate as much as possible, if they're 40% just south of the Montana-Wyoming border and they're not taking these sort of management prescriptions towards their herds, makes our life pretty tough. Hunters should be concerned.
Yep, Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct. We know that CWD is on the landscape now to stay. We're not even proposing that we're going to eliminate it. We know that, but the best we can do is to manage it. I don't know if the infection rate just immediately south of us in Wyoming is not that 30 and 40%. I don't have that number right off the top of my head. But they do have places in the state and in Colorado where those high infection rates have definitely impacted populations.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, may I jump into just on the issue of we've really stepped up our efforts on R3 or recruitment, retention and reactivation, and realize this is going to be a key player in that. And I think we also are seeing nationally the interesting articles on the people coming into hunting are really those who are interested. The new interest has been in protein. Not, you know, I know the traditional interest has been too, but so we are really stepping up our efforts on that front, the R3 front. And have been talking to an international and national effort, Wild Harvest, trying to talk about the impacts on protein and meat eaters. So tracking it, but it is scary.
All right, any further comments from the commission? Any public comment? Mr. Marchand.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I didn't expect to talk about this today, but I'm glad that it's on your agenda. And Tim has heard a lot of the stuff. 15 years ago, he and I went a lot of the rounds. He kind of got involved in the end of us trying to get rid of game farms. And for me, game farms, there were two problems with them. One was the sportsmanship aspect of it, but the other part of it was the CWD component. And 15 years ago, I spent a lot of time learning about CWD. And first of all, I appreciate what the department's doing, the seriousness they've taken and what we're doing. And I think that I'd agree that what you've done is dramatic. It's going to get more dramatic. You're probably not doing enough, okay? And the comments you've made, the concerns, you got it. There's a couple of things. One is that there are two of the actually best international research agencies around is the Rocky Mountain Lab down in Hamilton. They're very constricted by what they can say. And there is a doctor that was there that's retired, and I don't know where he is now. He's been retired for a number of years, who felt very, very constricted. And 15 years ago, he finally stepped out and said this. We asked, how is CWD being spread? And he finally said, by truck, because it's being spread by the spread of game farm. It was game farm animals. This thing started from the Colorado Research Facility, the lab at Colorado State University, that they have a lab there where they put sheep in a facility that they had been using for mule deer, in a facility they had been using to study scrapie in sheep for a long time. The deer became infected. They released them into the wild because they didn't know what was going on. And that's how it started. You trace this disease back. It starts right around that facility in Colorado, and it spreads. And then it got into game farm animals because of the nature of game farm animals. And then we put them into trucks, and we sent them to Wisconsin, and we sent them to the East Coast. And that's how we got to where we're at today. That was one of the reasons we wanted to get rid of game farms, that we wanted to control that. So the Rocky Mountain Lab is a good research facility. The other research facility is the McLaughlin Institute in Great Falls, which is a private institute. There was a Dr. Johnson there that attended a number of public hearings that I was to. He's really good. He's a lot older than me, so I don't know if he's still working up there, if he's still around, if he'd still speak or not, but he's got to be in his late 70s or so. He might be older than that. But he was very good, and he wasn't constricted as much as the folks at the, because that was a federal facility and what they were doing. I would tell you this, that as a hunter, I would never go down and participate in one of these hunts. I don't care whether you test my deer or not. I'm not going down there and participating in anything like that. I don't want, if you brought me back a deer and you said it tested positive, I don't want anything to do with that deer. I would never touch it. I'm already there, but I know too much. And so you're right when your concerns, what happens when people learn more about this? There's a real concern. And I would go back to, it does cross the species barrier. And what happened in England was that they were taking what they called downer cows. They were cows in feeding facilities, and they were grinding them up, and they were refeeding them to the cattle, okay, because it increased. You could grind it up and put it in with the grain or whatever the heck they feed them there, and it increased the protein value of it. And so it was a good way to get rid of, you know, I mean, we all want to make use of everything we have. And what happened is when they ground that up, it infected the cows, and when people got it, it infected, and some people would get infected. But that's how, once they quit feeding those downer animals, we did that in the United States a little bit. We immediately quit it. We didn't have a problem with it. Once they got rid of it, once they quit doing that, it's been under control. But it's really a scary thing, because when we don't know how, this prion is not, this is not a disease like anything else. It's in the prion, the infective agent, and we're not even sure we understand it. It's how it's infective, but it's virtually indestructible. It stays in the ground forever. You got to raise it to 2,000 degrees. I mean, you can cook the meat at 500 degrees. It won't kill the prion. And we don't know. Science doesn't understand what allows it to cross a species barrier, and when it crosses a species barrier, the nature of the disease changes a little bit too. So, and it can have a very long infective period. So you could have it and not know you have it and continue. It's in the spinal tissue. So you think about, if you have it, you have a surgery, and they don't clean the surgical, it can be passed that way. When you cut open a deer, you say, well, I'm going to cook the meat or whatever, da 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 da. What's one of the first things you do? You cut the head off your deer. That spinal stuff is on your saw. You're going to heat that saw to 2,000 degrees to, you know, what you're going to use that saw to cut up your meat. You start to see the risks in this thing. So I think my message is that, first of all, I think if the department or people want to reach out, there are some other good resources in the state. We're really fortunate to be in the state, because some of the best resources in the country are in this state. I would reach out, encourage it, and the diligence we're doing, I really support. This is something that's going to be, we're going to continue to deal with it. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Excuse me. For the record, could you state your name and where you're from, please? Because yep. Dan knows you, but I don't.
Chris Marchand, Marchion. I'm from Anaconda.
Thank you, Chris. Mr. Givock.
Commissioners, good morning. I'm Nick Givock. I'm the Conservation Director for the Montana Wildlife Federation. And I have to say right off the bat that I was thinking of being here in November of 2017 when we had the first detection. And we were really shocked this fall or last year at what the rates that we found, and especially in your country, Rich. So, I think it's a much more prevalent problem than we realized. And I think we're just going to see more of this. So, clearly this proposal is an effort to drive down deer numbers in these areas. And I think that, you know, this FWP has a good plan. I think the agency's on the right track, and we're accepting that we're going to have to accept lower deer numbers in some of these areas. So the one thing I would say to this commission and this department is, as we engage in this, seek out local sportsmen's groups to engage them in this, because like we said, we're going to need each other on this if we're going to try to keep this prevalence at the lowest rate possible. And the last thing I would say is, I know we're in a new Congress, but hopefully we can work with Senator Tester. He did have a bill to provide some funding for this, and maybe we can get that bill reintroduced this Congress. Anyway, we do think the department's doing a good job, and we support this proposal before you. Thanks.
Thank you, Nick. All right, any further comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. So we'll go to Alberta Sagegrass.